Welcome to the first episode in our podcast series on the dangers of magnet ingestion in pediatric patients. This series is sponsored by the North American Society of Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition and the NASPGHAN Foundation. I'm Dr. Marcia Kay, a pediatric gastroenterologist and department chair of the Department of Pediatric Gastroenterology and Nutrition at the Cleveland Clinic. This podcast focuses on recognizing the serious risks posed by neodymium magnet ingestion in children and adolescents. Our faculty today is Dr. Mark Gilger, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and section head of gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Baylor College of Medicine and chief of service of gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Texas Children's Hospital, and Dr. Adam Noel, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and associate professor of pediatrics in the Department of Pediatrics, section of pediatric gastroenterology at Louisiana State University Health Science Center and Children's Hospital of New Orleans, and Dr. Robert Kramer, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and associate professor of pediatrics at the Digestive Health Institute, section of pediatric gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at the University of Colorado, Denver, and the Children's Hospital.
Hello, I am Dr. Adam Noel. We are here today to discuss the dangers of neodymium magnet ingestions in our pediatric patients. It is becoming an emergent health issue. I'd like to give you a brief history of magnets so you understand what they are and how long they have been available. In between 1960 and 1970, the first type of rare earth magnet, called a samarium cobalt magnet, was produced. These are mainly for industrial purposes and for military purposes and did not find their way onto the market because of their high cost. However, in 1982, the neodymium rare earth magnet alloy was invented in combination between General Motors, Sumitomo Special Metals, and the Chinese Academy of Science. This was a combination of neodymium, iron, and boron. These magnets are extremely powerful, 5 to 10 times stronger than the older iron-based magnets. A magnet of this ore can sustain a weight of 1,300 times the magnet's weight. Only 1 kilogram of this magnet is used in the Prius hybrid car as its drive mechanism. These magnets are also used in many industrial and household products, such as cordless tools, hard drives, magnetic resonance imaging, hybrid engines, and windmills. In 1995 to 1996, the earliest reports of magnet ingestions with bowel perforations appeared in the medical literature. In 2002, McCormick et al. At the Sheffield Children's Hospital in the United Kingdom documented 24 cases of magnet ingestions in children from 7 to 15 years old. In 2006, 20 cases of magnet ingestions and injury to children was reported by the Center of Disease Control Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. 3/4 of these cases had bowel perforations, 1 in 5 contracted peritonitis with a mean hospital stay of 8.7 days. In 2006, the recommended age for these new magnet children's toys was raised from 3 to 6 years of age. In 2007, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission issued their first warning as far as magnetic ingestions in children was concerned, noting the possibility of high-powered magnets detaching from children's toys could cause injury and even death if swallowed. In 2008, a new set of magnetic toys came into the market, and the first was a magnetic toy ball called the NeoCube. This was subsequently followed by the Bucky Ball in 2009. In 2008, the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission documented more than 200 reports of cases requiring emergency surgery to remove the magnets. In 2009, the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission issued a ban on the sale of rare earth magnets to children under the age of 14. After a particular manufacturer failed to comply, a recall was ordered on 175,000 of these units. The takeaway message from this history is that these are a different, newer kind of magnets that are extremely powerful and more damaging in a shorter amount of time than previous magnets. These magnets are sold in sets anywhere from 125 to greater than 1,000 magnets per unit. This makes it difficult for parents and people that are monitoring the children to notice if even a few magnets are missing. Although these products are labeled as toys for adults, they are sold to children over 14 years of age and it can easily find their way into the hands and mouths of children. Now I would like to introduce Dr. Mark Gilger, who will elaborate on who is ingesting these magnets and providing a background on exposure and prevalence.
Thanks, Adam. As you may have heard, teens and adults are buying these magnets and ingesting them. But the surprising thing is that the older kids are swallowing them as they're trying to mimic jewelry piercing, such as a piercing of the tongue, a piercing of the nose, and of the cheek. We've been seeing these ingestions in toddlers for a long time, but this older child ingestion, and importantly, totally normal, healthy older children trying to mimic jewelry piercing. So this is an important new finding and recognition for all of us, and especially our emergency room physicians. We've also noted that exposure appears to be on the rise. A recent informal survey of the GI Bulletin Board by Dr. Adam Noel noted that these ingestions seem to be more common than we had previously suspected. Also, recent information by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has really documented that in children 0 to 17 years of age, there is an increasing recognition of magnet ingestions since 2002. The prevalence is clearly on the rise, and in order to be certain about this, the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition is planning to conduct a formal survey to ascertain prevalence and intervention, so please be on the lookout and respond. I'd like to leave you with several thoughts. Number one, these new powerful neodymium magnets are not grandpa's magnets. They're powerful and they can cause injury to children. It leads us to have a very high index of suspicion if magnets are felt to be involved. When a child is ingested one of these, mom and dad should try to help us by being certain we know how many magnets are involved. And we know that x-ray studies in the ER, where one magnet can look like single magnet, and yes, there are multiple magnets connected. When we enter the emergency room, we have to make sure that if one magnet has been ingested and no more, then this should be followed without issue. If not, we need to monitor these with serial x-rays. I'd now like to introduce Dr. Robert Kramer, a Colorado Children's Hospital, who will provide more information about symptoms, where the magnets are lodging, and potential damage they might cause.
Thanks, Mark. I think the key here is there's a great variety in the presentation that we see in these patients, ranging from the asymptomatic patient to those coming in with vague symptoms that can be as subtle as just malaise or some lethargy, or more clear with abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. This can easily be misconstrued as being part of a viral gastroenteritis or other more mild process, and so sometimes these patients are sent home without much intervention. As Mark said, I think there needs to be a high index of suspicion, and we need to be inquiring to parents about this as a possibility for some of these symptoms that we're seeing. Some patients then, even when they are identified as having magnet ingestion, are being sent home for multiple images or monitoring, but this can be problematic if there's not proper supervision and, I think, ownership of these patients to be sure that appropriate follow-up is obtained. I think the question about whether to intervene and how to intervene, as well as the timing of that intervention, creates an interesting diagnostic challenge. The impact of multiple magnets, which we'll discuss more in depth in our second podcast, really includes deep compression to the point that the magnets are buried within the tissue. And on x-ray, it can be difficult to distinguish between a single or a multiple magnet. But if they are compressing the tissue, this can lead to significant morbidity and mortality. including volvulus, perforation, sepsis, and even death. I think we need to balance our inclination to be conservative with the need to really be proactive in monitoring these patients. We need to look at the risks and benefits of intervention, which can be a challenge, I think, especially in the asymptomatic patient, especially when the magnets are not accessible via conventional endoscopy. As Dr. Gilrick mentioned, we are conducting a survey, and we hope to share these results during a June meeting with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. I'd like to close by saying that our faculty hopes we are able to alert you that the neodymium magnets are dangerous and require action, and hopefully we've raised awareness about the impact of ingestion. I hope you'll tune into our second podcast, which will review emergency room management.
Thanks for listening to this episode in the podcast series on the dangers of magnet ingestion in pediatric patients. Please go to naspagin.org to receive future episodes. I'm Marcia Kay.